Hello, everyone. Please, will you take your seats? Pasha, are you in the room? Right. You can choose whether to deliver your paper from your table or come up to the front, and it's your call. Whichever you feel is more comfortable for you. All right, everyone, we are about to start. Hello. Yes, we are about to start with the first of our papers, paper one this afternoon. Braille, A Key to Literacy, Independence and Employment. And it's by Pasha Ald, who's sitting up the front here, ready to present. And Pasha is from the South African Library for the Blind. So over to you now, Pasha.
Thank you, Mary. Good afternoon to everyone, and good afternoon to those joining us via live streaming. The first thing I have to say is that I feel as if I'm preaching to the converted here this afternoon, because many of us are passionate about Braille, and Braille is an emotive thing, and we all feel strongly about its promotion and the teaching of Braille. So, I hope that not all that I say is just something you know. But when I thought about this paper, for me, I looked at definitions of literacy, so I'm just going to highlight. I'm not going to read everything to you in my paper. When I looked at different definitions of literacy, I in fact was struck again by the important role Braille plays in the life of a blind person, whether from a childhood right through to adulthood. If we look at some of the definitions, the key words that stood out for me were things like constructing meaning, gathering meaning, interactive, literacy is interactive, it's competence, it's skills, it's competence, and it's knowledge. And I think we would all be hard pushed in this room and worldwide to say that Braille does not afford those who use it those benefits. Even when we teach children to read, we know that they are afforded access to words, the sounds of words, the construction of words, construction of sentences, layout, such as paragraphs, the structure of a document, and one can carry on and on. But just to say, we do know that we need educators who can teach Braille. And in South Africa, we have some challenges that the educators experience, some of which relate to teachers saying they do not find enough resources available to them, learning and reading material. So what we need is a Braille-rich environment for our learners so that they can learn and that they can have access to a variety of reading and learning material. Of course, being a fervent supporter of UEB or UBC for South Africa, I believe that UBC will, in fact, take care of quite a few of quite a substantial part of the shortage of learning and reading material, as books can be exchanged amongst different countries, and Braille becomes easier to teach, it becomes easier to produce, with less human intervention required for less rules, and it becomes much easier to produce. And of course, for children to read, and adults who become blind later, there are less ambiguities to contend with, and I believe that UBC will be of great benefit to people who are going to use Braille. And of course, I believe, with the changing economies in the world, that Braille will continue to become of even greater relevance to people using it. I'm going to highlight different sections of my paper, and I'm now at the part where we are speaking of a key to independence. Braille, we all know how Braille allows us all to read independently and to access whatever it is we need in our daily life, whether it be recipes, the reading of a recipe, any daily task we need to carry out. We all know, we all can attest to that. So I'm not going to highlight and dwell on that too long, but the most basic advantage is for us all to be able to read independently and access information. Then, of course, we all would like to see blind people employed. And we know that Braille certainly has an effect on the rate of employment. In my paper, I highlighted a study by Dr. Ruby Riles. I don't think that's the only one. I think there have been several such research papers on the effect of Braille on employment. And I think that we all know that powerful people are literate people. People who are able to be gainfully employed are literate people. And as we said, the role of Braille in literacy, it is the key to literacy. And so we also can see that it impacts on employment. In South Africa in 2011, I undertook to do a survey which really looked at that, and I tried to explore certain themes. And the themes I looked at was, why do people use Braille? I myself know why, but I really wanted to look at people who were employed. And in South Africa, we have blind people employed in an array of professions, from the legal field to music teachers, to those who have taught linguistics, and right across the field. And I really, through formal interview and questionnaires, I gathered information from these respondents. I had 70, and they responded to me, as I said, with questionnaires and interviews as they chose. The funny part about that was that I found that people became so emotive. If they had phoned me up about Braille, they wanted to keep talking about it all day, so I couldn't get my work done. So I had to stop that very quickly and say, we can have this discussion all day long, and we're saying the same things. But what the trends that I found was, there were two groups. There were people who learned Braille from an early age. They did not always have access to technology. But those who did, I was expecting them to say to me, no, my technology did replace Braille, because there is that movement in the world where people think that technology, such as associative networks, and just listening to a computer with speech, can replace Braille. And I'm sure we all in this room will be in one accord that that's simply not true. It's not possible. And for the reasons we mentioned, what Braille is to literacy and what literacy, what achieving literacy would entail. We found these two groups. I found these two groups in the survey. And what was interesting for me was I also looked at folk who were blinded later in life. And many of them found the use of Braille, and they wanted to learn Braille. I even spoke to a gentleman who became blind, and he was a minister, and he was so adamant to get back into the ministry that he learned Braille in 3 weeks. I don't know if that's not testimony enough. I actually don't know what is. So we had these two groups of people, and I was looking even at the folk who were employed as computer programmers, and I expected them to say to me, no, we can't, you know, we actually can replace Braille. But even those individuals, those respondents, they used Braille even at a basic level, whether it was putting a label on an object or marking a CD or really using Braille for, you know, just something very basic. They would not, they said in the workplace, they cannot manage without Braille because, and that's why UBC excites me so much, because we have access to a greater number of symbols which we didn't have before. But these people said to me that Braille for them allowed them to be able to have direct access to what they were doing when they were writing a command for a program or whichever it was they were doing. They had access to, they could touch and they could read it, and they could really, for them, they could not imagine just listening to a speech program and attempting to cope without Braille. I also tried to find out what people used Braille for. Many people used Braille, it was very task-orientated. People used audio for leisure reading, I found, but that they really wanted Braille for more detailed study. If they had to read a strategic plan or financial documents, when they had to do a presentation, they found that they could not, it was impractical to tell them listen and speak at the same time, and they felt that they really wanted to be able to interrupt themselves, stop reading and speak, and continue to present. Also, following presentations at work, if a colleague presented, had a PowerPoint presentation, and they had that, they wanted the Braille hard copy because they felt that the meaning was not only the text, but of course layout is a powerful guide to meaning as well. So people really use Braille for detail-orientated study. I spoke to someone in the legal profession, and they said, and this is anecdotal, maybe somebody just needs to do the research on that. They said that they are convinced that they internalize more complex material much better when using Braille. I'm for one, I'm a believer of that, but as I said, it's anecdotal, and we need someone to conduct such research. People said that they needed Braille to manage their working environment. They needed it to write reports. I had a music teacher. She needed it for compiling her music lessons. I had someone who was teaching people foreign languages. She said she needed it for writing reports. So we can see. And another person in the legal profession said to me, they're seeing colleagues have to glance down at their notes, which does not allow them the same freedom to argue a point when they're defending someone. But this person said he could just surreptitiously slide his hand down the page and continue to read, and while he still continued his argument. And of course, that also allowed him privacy and confidentiality. So we see that in the workplace Braille remains flexible, and that people were really very attached to it and found that life would be really difficult if they only had to avail themselves of a speech program and a computer. Of course, those who dealt with language studies and who taught people languages you do want to feel the diacritic in a language. You do want to feel what the word is spelled like. So that was a very strong theme that emerged, and people really felt that Braille for them. And I asked all of them, as part of the questionnaire, do you think computers can replace Braille? And there was only one who said they thought it could be done. The other 69 said, no, that's impossible. I don't know, that is certainly a very strong indication of what Braille means to people in the workplace. So not only does Braille have an impact on the rate of employment, it certainly allows blind people to really participate on an equal level with their seeing colleagues in the workplace. And many said, because there's also this movement that people feel excluded when they use Braille, I've heard it say. And when people responded to that question, they said, not at all. They would simply not be able to manage without Braille. Then, finally, I come to a few remarks that are important. I think in South Africa, we need to consider training, implementation, and monitoring. We need good policy relating to Braille, teaching, and we need to continue to promote Braille because we all know what it's meant to all of us in our lives, and because of the powerful role it plays. In our sector, we need to ensure that Braille remains as attractive as we know it can be. For our children, a Braille-rich environment with reading material and learning material of choice so that these are accessible for them. We need to also consider practical areas around Braille. Braille is often difficult to read when it is cold on a cold morning and our hands are very cold. I don't know how many of you remember sitting around the class heater and warming your hands. I can remember that from school days. We need to find clever ways of making Braille, addressing these little practical issues. I have a little pipe dream of a Braille page that keeps my hands warm. I don't know where we'll find one and who will be so clever to develop it. I, of course, for one, am a firm believer in the refreshable Braille display, so I, in my paper, really advocate strongly that this device becomes more affordable and that all Braille writing devices simply becomes more affordable and are placed in the hands of people, especially in South Africa, in the rural areas where, you know, people do not yet have access to technology and cannot avail themselves of things like refreshable Braille displays. So I would like to see them become. So I was very excited to hear about plans for a much more affordable Braille display. We need to ensure that our teachers have a firm base of knowledge when teaching pre-Braille reading skills and teaching Braille to our young learners and our older adults, in the case of Braille instructors in South Africa. We need to ensure that we have wise educators that can bring to our children the message of Braille. We need to continue to work for Braille to be as attractive as it can be, and I think I spoke about more. I think I would like to mention more music Braille. We want different kinds of Braille, you know, whether it's books on playing chess, but we want a variety. We don't only want what someone has available. We want a variety. We want a Braille-rich environment right through, and I really urge that we all work strongly towards that here in ICIB and, of course, here in South Africa, on right up from grassroots level, right up, that we work to ensure that we have access to these materials. Then finally, there is this debate about Braille versus technology and technology versus Braille. I must say, for me, I would like to say to people, I don't think it is an either-or situation, and I highlight that in my paper too. I think we need to achieve a golden mean by which these two can function together so that it doesn't become a debate. Yes, we can have stimulating debate about these about these modes of communication, and it may even be that some blind people identify with their blindness differently and prefer to gather information much, you know, it's an individual thing. So I would like to see that we really not make this a debate, but that we concentrate on letting them work in synergy and achieve the golden mean so that a blind child learns Braille and that they move on to learn other skills such as the computer, such as music Braille, and that they still, through access to Braille and to computers, become adults who can participate on an equal level. We have seen past generations who've achieved this. So when teachers say to me they cannot teach Braille, it's difficult, I don't hold to that. We have so much proof of the contrary, and I really want to see us really see Braille and technology side by side, achieving the golden mean so that our blind youth of tomorrow and those who will come after us have the benefit of Braille and develop their skills and become adults who can participate on an equal level. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pasha, for your paper. Do we have any questions for Pasha? UK, all right.
Pasha, it's Mike Townsend from the UK. Exciting, very interesting report, interesting study. I do like your concept of a Braille-rich environment. I'm getting a lot of feedback from UK users of Braille. We get a lot of Braille in the UK. The government makes everything available in Braille. Your bank will tell you how much money you haven't got. We've got a lot of it in the UK. Unfortunately, a lot of people are missing out on the other parts of that rich environment. And I think, as we noted in our UK report, the use of the Braille library is going down. Unfortunately, a lot of blind people in the UK now are associating Braille with the boring side of life, the stuff you get from government, these information and warning posters and all of these sort of things. I think we've got to do a lot more to promote the richness of that Braille environment, and we've got a very rich environment in the UK, and I think you've got a good one in South Africa, to encourage people to enjoy it. And I enjoy it through the great big thick volumes of paper and also, as you've said, through refreshable Braille. So I think it is a golden mean. They are interchangeable. They are complementary. It is vital that we get refreshable Braille devices down in price. But I do like this concept of the Braille environment, a Braille-rich environment, and that's something that I will try and take forward in our promotional activities with ISV, because Braille is more than a boring government leaflet.
Oh, thank you very much, Mike. Any other comments for Pasha? Canada?
Hi, it's Jen from Canada. I just wanted to say, before I say this, I just want to add that I know there are probably people here who would have more information on this, but my educational background is linguistics, and one of the things that we study is literacy and issues around the way our brains process the different kinds of linguistic input that we get, whether it's auditory or visual, whether we're hearing or reading. And one of the things that would come up is the fact that reading tends to be more active than listening, and where this comment is coming from is the reference to, I believe it was a lawyer who mentioned that reading Braille was sort of better for absorbing complex, detailed information, and I mean, I found that to be so personally, but I just wanted to say in terms of studies, I don't know whether there are studies specifically on as to whether reading Braille versus audio input makes that difference, but I do know that in terms of reading versus listening, that is something that is sort of is generally true, that because it the process, the mental process that's involved, whether you are reading print or braille, you're reading, and it's a more active process than listening tends to be. And some learners are audio learners, a lot of people are visual learners, and I am more of a visual learner, so I need to, you know, although it's braille, I need to read it if I really want to absorb the information. So I guess I just wanted to say that that might have been an anecdote, but that I know there is research out there. It's just that I don't know that it's specific to braille. It's just reading in general. And unfortunately, I graduated long enough ago that I don't remember the names of the researchers. But I did just want to sort of confirm that that is more than an anecdote. So thank you.
Thanks, Jean. Any more comments for Pasha? New Zealand. Okay, Maria?
Hi, Pasha. I just want to compliment you on your report and the passion that you have in your voice and the way you delivered it. You're really, really keen. And I, too, if I'm having to study or read minutes, I like them in hard copy braille or refreshable, but it's got to be braille, not listening to it. Cheers.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Judy Dixon from the U.S., and that was a very interesting survey that you did, and I was particularly struck by the notion of the respondents had about will computers replace Braille, and the fact that most of them thought that it was impossible is an interesting idea. I've been thinking about this a lot, particularly at this conference, because rarely do many of us who live in countries such as the U.S., rarely do we see large quantities of hard copy Braille anymore. And if we go to a conference, they give us a flash drive with the conference papers on it, and maybe there'll be BRF files on that flash drive, but usually not. Usually we get just a flash drive and that's it. You're on your own. You better bring your own device and have it with you and be able to read. And it's, I really, even if we had gotten a flash drive with BRF files on it at this conference, I still find the way I take in Braille and comprehend is different with hard copy Braille than it is with refreshable Braille. And I'm hoping, and if others agree that it's different, and probably some do, because that's why we have all this hard copy Braille, and I guess. But I think that we need to find a way to express that or a reason, because Braille libraries are not going to keep housing large quantities of physical Braille books that blind people aren't borrowing and aren't reading. And that's certainly true now in the U.S. and the U.K. And it's only going to be a matter of time when there will be a critical mass of refreshable Braille displays. And when that happens, we'll have to figure out how to justify why we also need hard copy Braille.
Nigeria is next, I think.
Yes, this is Sarah from Nigeria. I just want to say well done to Pasha. I'm a very good user of Braille. I enjoy it a lot. I think the problem is that many people think it's rather cumbersome to use Braille, to carry the materials around and all of that. Well, I use the slate and stylus, and I'm very free to use it wherever I go. I just want to encourage everyone to think back and remember that this gift from Louis Braille must not be left to die. Apart from the fact that it's a gift, it's a very, very rare one too. In my opinion, anyone who thinks Braille should be forgotten because of electronic devices is like disassociating themselves from blindness. I want to think if I throw away Braille, I'm trying to say I'm not happy to be blind. Not that I'm fully happy, but then, I don't know if you understand what I mean. It's not a happy thing, humanly speaking, but then we have a way to go around it. So we should. I accept myself as a blind person, and I think Braille is a very good way of letting people know that I accept myself as a blind person. I just want to encourage everyone to use Braille. Thank you.
The United States.
Yes, this is Diane Wormsley from the United States. And Pasha, I would like to ask if you have written up the results of your survey in an article to be published, or if you haven't, I'd encourage you to do so, because there is so little research and literature, and something like this is a valuable contribution to the literature. Can you just comment on that?
Hi, Diane. I must also confess to you that I've read a lot of your material, so I the Braille Rich idea, I think I saw in a Braille literacy work that you have done and a few others, and I can't concur with that enough. We the more Braille, the better. But no, I have it in a very in its draft format, literally with every response. So I will just take it further and write an article on it and then see to it that it's published. You know, people can advise, colleagues can advise where it should be published, but yes, certainly to be made available to people to read, because it is. I also find we don't have enough research on Braille. The teaching, the promotion, the various aspects and complexities around Braille. So I concur with that, and I undertake to make sure that that's done. Thank you.
You're going to be held to it. Right. Any other points for Pasha? No? All right. Well, Pasha, thank you very much, and I think we should... Thank you. Now, we have our next paper due. I've just allowed a few minutes between papers to make sure that we've got time to enable our presenters to be comfortable. So if we're looking at the impact of UEB or UBC on African languages in South Africa, and that's Simon Netshituni and Johannes Dube. Now, I'm not sure whether you're both presenting or one or the other, but why don't you both come up to the front, please, and you can tell us how best you want to handle this. Well, we have both our presenters here, Johannes and Simon, and Johannes is going to lead off for us. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, technology. President of ISAP, Mary. And... delegates of ISAP, we are proud to have been given this opportunity to make a presentation of our paper, being observers in this assembly. It's myself, Johannes, and my co-presenter, Simon Nechituni. We want to express our sincere gratitude to the executive and also to our chairperson of the new established organization, South African Braille Authority, Mr. de Klerk. However, what I want to bring to this assembly is that this paper was done by a collective. We actually were consulting with other people in making sure that this paper is put into place. That's why in our preface of this paper, we have acknowledged some people who helped us and also people who were very instrumental in making sure that the African Braille is brought into place in South Africa. We have mentioned a few people here in regards to people who were instrumental in bringing the South African African Braille into South Africa. We've got a name of Mr. Kwela, who pioneered the Isikosa and IsiZulu Braille. And we've got Mr. Du Plessis, who championed Tshivenda, Xitsonga, and Sotho Braille. However, like I said, that there are so many people who were so instrumental in making sure that you are able to draft and be able to present this paper today. We are not forgetting Miss Botha, who also was able to give us information from Pioneer. And we've got Mr. de Klerk, who also gave us information, and the National Council for the Blind, who gave us access into their library to actually be able to extract some of the information that is tabled in our paper today. Our emphasis here in this paper, it's actually on the impact that the UEBC has into our African Braille. But we also have a background history as to where Braille comes from, the establishment of Braille in South Africa. So I'll touch, because I want to emphasize on the people that actually were instrumental in actually making sure that we've got African Braille in South Africa. Mr. Nechituni, myself, and the other people that I've mentioned, not forgetting Mr. Pike, who is my colleague at Blind SA Braille Services. We have made a history of other people, like, for instance, in our paper, I'm sure those of you who have read the paper, that we've got people who were not Africans, but who had the passion of helping and making sure that they help with codes, and they also help with establishment of African languages in Braille. Mr. Nechituni, like I've just said, he's the author of the paper, and we have actually made sure that we emphasize the problems that are there when UPC is included in our African Brain. So Mr. Neshetwini is going to be making a very important contribution towards that, because now he will be actually talking about the actual challenges that we are facing as the Braille readers in South Africa in regards to UPC. So I just want to take you through a little bit here in terms of the people who contributed as to what are the things that were put in place. In regards to contractions, guides, and so forth, I can mention the name of Mr. Duplessis, Mr. Walter Cohen. Mr. Duplessis was very instrumental again in working with Mr. Kwela, devising guides in the use of Braille in African languages. I can mention a few here. There is a guide for the use of Zulu Braille in 1995. And another guide is for the use of Xhosa. That was 1995 also. A guide to the use of Northern Sotho Braille, 1996. A guide to the use of Southern Sotho, 1996. A guide for the use of Tswana Braille, 1996. A guide to the use of Tsonga Braille, 1997, a guide for the use of Swati Braille. In actual fact, here I worked hand in hand, myself and Wellington Pike, we worked hand in hand with Omdu in bringing this guide into being. And a guide for the use of Ndebele Braille. Also, we were part, myself and Wellington Pike, who is our proofreader in Braille services, to helping Mr. Duplessis to come up with this guide. And I want to go to the implementation. Let's see. Yeah, the reception of Braille by readers in South Africa. Many people, in South Africa, Braille started in the 1980s, the 1800s, by pioneer printers, and the only Braille that was produced then was English. Up to the 1970s, when Braille was introduced to the African languages. And there were schools, in actual fact, that made sure that Braille in all African languages is taught in those different schools. And this school spread across South Africa. I can name a few here. We've got Bartemia School for the deaf, for Bartemia School for the blind and deaf, which is teaching Setswana. Busile School for the blind, Sepedi. Ifata School for the blind and deaf, Isikosa. Philadelphia School. All languages. Kanyisa School for the blind, Isikosa. Lidaba School for the handicapped, Xitsonga. Riboni School, Xitsonga and Chivenda. Situtulwane. Elson School, Sepedi, Chivenda and Xitsonga. Sibonile School, isiZulu and Sisutu. Silinobuhle School, Swati. Silwe School, Sepedi. Tibuluha School for the blind and deaf, Sisutu. Chilijini School, Chilijini Special School, Chivenda. Vulega School, isiZulu and Zamoguhle School, isiXhosa. The African languages have been adapted in the 1970s. The braille that was used then was grade 1 braille. Up to the time when people like Mr. Montomuhle Khwela, Mr. Radise, Mr. Edward Makafula, and Dr. Halter Cohen, they came with the codes for the African languages. And Braille was developing after that, when Braille in the late 80s, it was now adapted electronically. And Braille had problems, especially in African language, because we've got this diacritic signs and so forth. That is what Mr. Nechiduni is going to be alluding to. The issue of diacritic signs and other special signs. However, we developed to such an extent that together with SANCB, I think it was very instrumental to making sure that now African languages, there are examinations. The first examination that was written in Braille African languages was in 2005. That was in Sikosa and Susulu. And the person who was very instrumental there was Mr. Wellington Pike. I was moderating. I must say it was not an easy task, because we had to translate all the rules, instructions from English to all these languages, and also set an examination. And in 2007, followed the Sesotho, and the year after it was Tshivenda, which of course my co-presenter next to me here was very instrumental in translating the rules and instructions into Tshivenda. So in that way, Braille, it's on its development, especially in African languages, development stage. And then also these tables in Tshivenda and Xitsonga were revised, because now we wanted to align these codes into UBC, because in South Africa we call it UBC, as the paper by Mr. de Klerk has alluded as to why, what is the reasons, why do we say UBC. So we had to revise some of the codes in Tshivenda and Xitsonga. I think also Mr. Nechutin, in his presentation, he is going to be touching on that. Like I said, that one is going to be very interesting to the members of the assembly, because Nechutin is going to be dealing with the practical challenges that we are faced with in regards to UEBC vis-a-vis the implementation of UBC. So, like I said, most of the first part of this paper deals with the history, the establishment of Braille in South Africa, the history introduction, the history background, the introduction of Braille to readers, development, like I've just alluded to, the unified Braille that is going to be tackled by Mr. Nishiduni. So I want to close my presentation by saying I'm very thankful and very honored to have been given this opportunity as a person who lost his sight when I was old. I had Pasha Tashim making an example of a politician that lost his sight when he was old. And I must say to you, in this assembly, I think I'm an exception, because I'm one person who reads Braille with one hand, because I lost my sight at the age of 17 during the Soweto uprisings. And I was shot at, wherein my left hand was numb. I didn't have any feeling of Braille, so I was forced to use my right hand in order to read Braille. However, my right hand was the strongest hand. So I felt very emotional when I was given this opportunity. That, I mean, when I was growing up, I never thought of anything that relates to blindness. I didn't know Braille myself until I was blind. So that's why I'm saying, to me, it's really an honor to have been given this opportunity to make this presentation. And Pasha, I think I agree with you when you were presenting, to say when your hands are cold, Braille is very hard to can read. I was sitting next to an aircon there. By the time I come here, My fingers were very, very cold. It was very difficult. So it's an experiment. It's a practical one. Were very cold. It was very very impossible for me or difficult for me to get read this document. However, now we're coming to the interesting part that is going to be presented by my co-presenter here, Mr. Simon Nechituni. Over to you, sir. Thank you, Press.
Afternoon, everyone, and thanks once more for the opportunity. I'm not going to waste your time. I'm going to start off on challenges themselves, because I presume we might be a bit back with respect to time. The introduction of Braille, the introduction of UBC in South Africa has been quite a challenging one, and most of the South Africans who are seated here would agree that It was a mammoth task to get all these languages on board with respect to the systems that were in place before the UBC was introduced. The need is there. Everyone could never really deny the fact that there's a need. But how do we harmonize the circumstance we've got in our own languages with the UBC, which is very much important with respect to the manner in which the writing would be experienced by the blind person. So here we try to single out most problematic areas in languages that are specified, which is Tshivenda and Xitsonga and Sipedi in some circumstances. Because with respect to Nguni languages, Nguni here we mean isiZulu, isiXhosa, isiNdebele, and isiSwati. We didn't have much problems, though we didn't have much problems, except to say that we had to compromise on other contractions like the DL, which was represented by the lower D in isiZulu and isiXhosa, to be uncontracted unless it is used at the beginning of the word. The Sepedi issue, as I indicated here, is around the diacritic on the S. We're calling them diacritics, but in the actual fact, I think they appear to be circumflexes. Now, it represents, according to the current UBC UEB setup, a dollar sign, right? And in Isipedi, it's got another impact when it is used with that particular diacritic on the S. It becomes a sh sound. Now, how do we harmonize the two? If I'm reading a document that requires some dollars, some yen, some euros, how do we come to the conclusion that this should be the sign, not the word, not the currency symbol? The obvious fact is that we had to come up with a solution, which was to say that let us use a grade one indicator sign whenever those currency signs appear, in order not to confuse the usage of a diacritic with the S within the sentence. In Tshivenda and Xitsonga, we have a serious problem there, more especially in Tshivenda, because these diacritics are very much frequent. You can't go for a sentence without using a diacritic. It's very difficult. It's very much unlikely. And in those areas where the diacritic appears, it appears on the, with respect to Tshivenda, it appears on the D, it appears on the L, it appears on the N, it appears on the T. And on the N, it appears twice. There are instances where it appears on top, there are instances where it appears right below the letter. And it will obviously give different sounds on the particular word that is affected by the diacritic. For our African speaking colleagues who are here, it's more like when you're using your gabis and your deltekan on full, which is to feel. The very same VOEL would be used with a gabi, if I recall well, then it would be fuel, which means a bird. Now, those are circumstances that occur in Tshivenda as well, where you find that the diacritic put before the T changes completely the effect of the language, or of the word. For example, we have the word like Thava, which is T-H-A-V-H-A with the diacritic on the T. The very same T-H-A-V-H-A would appear as Thava, and those are two different meanings, because the other one means step, the other one means mountain, respectively. So those are challenges, and we cannot avoid them, because it's a system that is embedded in the language. So what we try to come up with is that, be that as it may, we do have those problems occurring in the language, because of the use of UBC, which is very much responsive, according to us, to many ambiguities that existed before, which are now ironed out. What do we do? We have had many meetings before with respect to Tshivenda in particular, where we sat and discussed these things, and some of the solutions we tried to come up with were, perhaps if we can use the .45 before the N instead of the .4, would be very much practical. So instead of the apostrophe, because in some instances the diacritic beneath the letter N would be used in Braille, we would use the apostrophe. So that was an ambiguity by itself. So we had to come up with a temporary solution, I would say, to say let us have the .45 before the N. Even if we still have problems with those kind of diacritics used as that, because we wanted to emulate as much as we can the print. And in these instances, we've got a .45, which is before the N, and by position, slightly above. Whereas the diacritic itself, or the circumflex, is below the letter. And in 2009, those were other issues we discussed when we were trying to address these issues, together with changing the whole system, making it to align with the UBC. We said we're going to be using .46 instead, and .4 in some instances. And we checked it against the frequency. It happened that the position, the 4-6 position, would be more or less similar to what the print is, even though it isn't exactly like it should be. But anyway, what would we do? We should just live with the circumstance by then. Now, our aim, bringing these problems or challenges to the assembly, we're not necessarily to say that the assembly should give us some solutions, because it would be practically very impossible for this assembly to give us solutions in this respect. But to give the necessary overview of what we are experiencing as South Africa with respect to UBC vis-a-vis the languages in their diversity. So, in short, Chair and colleagues, I would love to wrap up there that we believe that we shall be coming up with permanent solutions. One cannot preempt when, but we've got a belief. We live in a faith world now, where we should believe that we will one day come up with a solution. On that note, Chair, I should thank everyone for the opportunity listening to me, and thank you.
thank you, Johannes and Simon. You provide a very important lesson to the rest of the world. When we think about any harmonization, we have to look to South Africa and watch and see that you are really making huge strides in achieving harmonization and using the basis of the construct of Unified English Braille to help you do that. Thank you. Now, there are questions from the floor for you. Christo, to begin with.
Thank you, Mary. Not a question, but possibly a request. Especially in Tshivenda, there are diacritics which are placed in unusual positions, like a circumflex under the letter and so on. I believe there are Unicode allocations for those characters. Perhaps we could consider assigning grade 1 symbols to some of those which do not have them yet.
Oh yeah, thanks Christoph for the advice. I think I'm sitting here with the chairperson of the committee that deals with African languages in South Africa. Obviously, we take that into consideration. We should advise us on how to do it. I think it's a good advice.
Excuse me, Mary, can I just clarify? I was particularly thinking of the Code Maintenance Committee to assign some UEB grade 1 symbols for those which do not have them yet.
Right. Then that, I imagine, can be raised with Phyllis, but the next comment is from Pete, so...
Right. Hopefully you can hear me now. It's kind of a related question. I was thinking of all of the various symbols and challenges that you have. And is there a Unicode representation for most of the symbols that you're referring to, most of the characters that you're referring to? Or is that further work that needs to be done internationally? Do you know?
Internationally, Peter, I wouldn't really know. But I am not quite sure if there are, to my knowledge, Unicodes in the country with respect to the languages that I was referring to. And hence I said, perhaps such move to can say, let us try and get some Unicodes that would be assigned would be a good advice to the committee that deals with African languages.
Joe Sullivan?
Well, I can answer that question. Yes, there are Unicode values for those special characters.
Any further comments? Nigeria?
I think Gene will be, yes. In West Africa, we have quite a number of different print characters, right? And in going through the usage, Braille usage book, I noticed that characters, that some countries use the same print characters and have different Braille symbols for those same characters, right? So maybe one of the things we can do is to go through, when we get the full list of alphabets for the Braille usage, new Braille usage, we can do a check to see which symbols occur in more than one language, and then see what the symbols are used in. It may help us to to solve some of the problems. I know these problems also exist in West Africa.
Any further comments? Well, there appear to be no further comments. Thank you very much to Johannes and Simon for your paper this afternoon. And we just to confirm that when Judy puts the minutes together and the minutes go out, the papers will and reports will form attachments to those minutes. So thank you to both of you, and let's acknowledge you in the normal way. Thank you. Now, we are shortly going to afternoon tea, and we will resume in 36 minutes for the benefit of people outside the web streaming who aren't quite sure of the time. We're resuming in at 3:15, which is about 35 minutes away. Thanks very much, everyone.
And as you heard, we're going to take a break for tea, and I'd like to invite you to join us again in half an hour's time. The stream will stay connected for this duration.